So even when things do go wrong, which they will always eventually go wrong, it's much, much less likely that it will go down the wrong way because people go, well, I'd love Dr. Mo because she cares so much. And that comes from that doing things for the heart reasons and not for the fear reasons.
Welcome to the So You're a Vet Now What, the podcast. This is a show that serves as your audio mentor in your journey as a veterinarian. And each week, our awesome host, Dr. Mariah McCauley, will be bringing you insightful short-form interviews with happy, successful vets who are eager to share their career and clinical tips to make your life easier. So whether you're a final year vet student or a recent graduate, this podcast is your trusted companion on the pathway to success in veterinary medicine. Over to you, Mo.
Welcome back to So You're a Vet, Now What? I'm your host, Dr. Mariah McCauley. Today on the podcast, I am joined by Dr. Hugh Hemstra of the Vet Vault podcast. Hugh is an experienced emergency veterinarian who also hosts the acclaimed Vet Vault podcast, which brings professionals from across the globe together to share their insights and strategies to supercharge your passion for vet med. In this episode, Hugh and I dive into the issue of client bashing and expose the negative impact that it can have on you, your team, and your clients. We talk about why it happens and how you can change your mindset to spark positive change in those around you. It was an absolute joy speaking with Hugh, and I am excited to bring this episode to you, so let's jump right in. All right. Well, Hugh, welcome to the show. I guess I should say welcome back to the show, right?
I don't know.
It's been a few years.
On mine.
Yeah, remember, it was a couple years ago now. It was a couple years ago. It was like COVID times, so that doesn't exist in our brains. Regardless, welcome to today's show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat to you again and for the roles to be reversed. It's a novelty for me.
I know, right? It's weird. We were talking about this before we recorded, how odd it is as a podcast host to then be a guest on someone else's podcast. There's so much less work you have to do. You just log in and the other person does all the stuff. So I'm glad I can give you that little bit of respite to just be the guest today. But we are talking about something that is rather near and dear to both of our hearts. I mean, you've had experience, obviously, like training up and leading staff within a practice. And I'm here just as a 4 years qualified veterinarian that's somewhat in that position in my own practice. Not my own practice, the practice I work in. I don't know to practice, you guys.
Yeah.
But we are going to be talking about some client interactions and like how we talk to and talk about our clients, which a lot of times we frame this in the sense that like when you look on social media, the big one that we see is you'll see a lot of accounts that are honestly like client bashing. We see it all the time. They'll be like, oh, it's that client, the one who just thinks that we're all in it for the money. And we kind of powwow around that idea to be like, oh, yeah, that person's terrible. But gosh, as much as there's like that little bit of the emotional release to just like talk about it in that sense, there's actually a lot of like a negative side to that. So Hugh, you were going to talk a lot more about like what that is, how that impacts us as veterinarians, impacts our staff, our teams, and ultimately how we interact with those clients. So when you have seen this client bashing happening, have you seen it in your own practices? Have you seen it on social media? Like, where have you seen it?
I've done it. And that's the reality of it. I get it. I totally get it because it is. The reality is that our client interactions, we all know, it's one of the hardest things we do, especially in large volume. A lot of people every day, day in, day out, can be draining, and some people are hard work. And so I get it. I've done it and I totally see it everywhere I work, and I see it on social media a lot. But I've learned over the years for myself that it's harmful. It's fun in the moment. It's a bit like gossiping or other habits. And I heard something a while ago that resonated with me that said, we actually like being angry as humans. There was neurological studies that showed that they put probes into brains. This is an old experiment. They won't be able to do this anymore. And then people get to press buttons that release certain stimuli in certain brain areas. And then they track which buttons they choose to press. And obviously the pleasure centers, people love stimulating those. And one of the things that they pressed way more than people realized is the anger center.
Oh.
There's actually a hormonal release or something that makes it. We kind of like being a little bit peed off. So I think that's partially why it's nice to get that rage out there. There's a positive neurological feed into it. So I get why we do it, but I do think it's harmful. I think it's a slow poison for yourself. So when I get on my soapbox about this topic saying, treat your clients with empathy and respect as a mindset, not just in the moment, because I've almost never seen veterinarians or any veterinary personnel being impolite or being rude or unprofessional to the face of a client. We're very good at that. But it's that behind the scenes thing with your friends, with your colleagues, with yourself, in your own mind, in your soul almost.
Yeah.
I think that is bad for you. So when I get on the soapbox, I don't talk about it from the perspective of a business owner or as a do this for the clients because clients are going to like us more and it's going to be better for the practice. I talk about it. This is good for you, for your sustainability, for your career longevity, is to have a positive client attitude versus that almost adversarial. Because it's often a, I don't know if you noticed that you were working during COVID as well, but when we kicked clients out for the period of COVID and did curbside consults and that, so many vets were so happy about it. They're like, oh, finally, get the clients out the building and I can just focus on the thing I care about and it's the animals. And I think probably why I started thinking about it a lot is when I interview senior vets, and I'm sure you'll find the same. So in all the interviews I've done, speaking to other vets as well, one of the consistent themes that comes out in vets who are 20, 25 years out and still love the job, and you ask why, and they say, oh, it's about the people. I love the interactions with people. It's not because I'm a fantastic surgeon or I've saved 10,000 animal lives. That's all cool. But the sustainable thing is the relationships that we have with the people we work with. And so clients, coworkers, and everything like that. That's, we're made for connection and relationships as a species. That's my thing. I love talking about having that shift about, and when we do that negative breaking clients down, clients suck. Oh, they, clients are so stupid. Oh, you know, that's probably the most common thing I see. It's not that people don't like clients, but it's often they'll come in with the animal that's been injured or they've done this or they've done that. And it's when it is due to a fault of the clients or something preventable. Or so for us, where I work here, we have tick paralysis, which is a horrible, horrible disease to have and a horrible disease to treat. And it is highly preventable by just putting the right anti-tick treatments on. And then people don't, they forget. And then it's that attitude of, well, if you're going to be stupid, then yeah, it's your fault. Even that, I get it, it's true, but it doesn't help me because then I lose empathy with that person.
Yeah, and I'll pause there because there's so many things that you've just mentioned that I think we need to dive into a little bit deeper. And one of them being this like innate need that we have for relationships. I think that's something that we should like definitely keep at the forefront of why we're talking about this and why we're doing this. But I do also want to point out, because I know some people will be like, well, there are those clients that are super mean and nasty and like, we just don't want to deal with them. And like, yes, they do exist. But I feel like there's two main categories that we have of these clients that we end up complaining about. One category is the naive clients, the ones who just don't seem to get it. They maybe brought their animal in for something that we as vets think is a no-brainer. Like, why didn't you just put anti-tick prevention on your pet? Or why did you let your dog get into the trash type of thing? Or, oh, I wish these clients just understood what I was talking about with kidney disease. Like, there's that category, which I feel like is the one we're mostly going to be talking about today. And then there's that other category where people, in a way, they're kind of feeding off of that anger. They want to be angry too. And they are just emotionally blackmailing vets. Like there is that category that we also complain about. And each category has a slightly different reason behind why we complain about them. One is more serious. The other one is a little less serious, I guess I could say. But I just wanted to kind of separate those two, two categories a little bit more. Granted, what we're talking about applies to both, but there's definitely a different response to the latter category. So going back to this whole, like this need for, innate need for relationships, as you mentioned, like the relationships that we have with our clients, they're honestly longer lasting than the relationships we have with their pets because the pets don't live as long. So chances are you'll see a fair number of clients through like, I guess you could call it like 4 or 5 generations of pets potentially through the time that they stay at your practice. And having like, I even in 4 years that I've been in practice, the relationships that I have with clients, that is more fulfilling than seeing the three like little puppies, or that other dog that was really sick and I took the foam out of their stomach and now they're doing better. Like, it all really comes down to the relationships that I have with those clients. And to a degree, I feel like that's why it hurts more when a client interaction doesn't go well, is because there's so much value in that relationship. So talk a little bit more about that. Like, let's dive into that a little bit.
It's one of the tricky things, because I've been working in emergency practice solely so the first about half of my career was GP practice, so long-term relationships, and then switched to emergency. And it's one of the things that I think makes emergency a little bit harder is we actually don't have that.
That's
our clients
true.
Come and go. We have short-term relationships. So we can get it so often because we're a 24-hour hospital where I work, and people will send us their really sick animals. And those are pretty intense relationships.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the people that are all in, and we have an animal in there for a week on a ventilator, and they're in and out. And those are magical relationships. The people who are all in, they love us because we're doing life-saving stuff. But I find that as I think one of the long-term sustainability problems with emergency practice is that lack of long-term relationships. We miss out on that. And I see it as something that's missing. Now, probably that's one of the things that draws a lot of people to emergency practice. They go, well, yeah, I can meet you, quick hello, and we make a quick connection, and then you're out, and I don't have to worry about you liking me long term because I fix a problem and then I send you back to your GP vet. But I'm sorry, I've lost my trail of thought there a little bit. What was our question again?
No, we're talking about the difficulty with developing those long-term relationships in ER versus in a GP setting. So for me, I'm in GP, so I get to see people for like 3, 4, or 5 of their pets through those lifetimes, whereas you get to see them on their worst possible day for a very short amount of time, and there's a lot of emotions and a lot of finances that are usually involved in that. So it impacts the longevity that a lot of veterinarians are in emergency practice because they don't get that relational side of medicine. I think that's where you were going.
Yeah. So, but let me pick it up there again. So, but even with that, within that scenario, there's still connection. Like, we often think that we're doing it for the animals, but we're there doing it for the owners of the animals. We wouldn't see those animals if those people didn't bring them.
Yeah.
We still have that connection, even in those urgent, short-term little, it's almost like speed dating, in and out, making your connection. So I think, and it's almost more tempting in emergency to have that adversarial, people are so stupid attitude, because we do see all the emergencies. We see the dumb things. They're not coming in for their vaccinations. The responsible, smart, educated clients are often not the ones coming into us because they've done something they shouldn't have, and now they've got a crisis. So it's much easier to slip into that, mm-hmm. another dumb person here with their poor pet. I have a quote that I wrote down years ago. It's become a mindset. I don't even have to look at it, but it is never assume malice when stupidity will suffice. Never assume stupidity when ignorance will suffice. Never assume ignorance when forgivable error will suffice. And that's probably where I use that a lot in my head, because I'll get that same. My first reaction will often be the same. Phone rings. Oh, this and this and this. My dog's eaten these things. And I'm like, oh, you idiot. Why? And then I go, forgivable error, like the tick treatment thing.
Yeah.
They're not malicious. They did not treat the animal because they want their animal to get sick and die of tick paralysis. Maybe they're ignorant. Maybe they genuinely didn't know. We get that. I'm like, there are still people who don't understand the severity of the disease. So then I go, well, you're ignorant. That's okay. But you're not stupid, because that's the big mistake we make, is that we go, well, it's stupid people. Not stupid, ignorant, maybe. But usually it's forgivable error. And I'm not going to be the one to cast the first stone, because I do lots of dumb things in all sorts of aspects in my life. Maybe not so much with my pets, because that's what I do for a living. I think we forget that we think and live and breathe animals. So our animals get all the right things done because that's what you do. But I'm a terrible car owner. You know, I neglect my car. I forget to. I once had a motorbike seize because I didn't put oil in. That's really stupid. But it's not because I wanted to kill my motorbike. And I know that bikes need oil, but it was just forgivable error. I was just, mm-hmm. you know, life. Life happened. The last part of that, the quote is, never assume error when information that you haven't adequately accounted for will suffice. So, and that means sometimes
That's huge.
We have shared responsibility. When people don't do something, sometimes maybe it's you, maybe you didn't explain it properly. The client who didn't put the e-collar on, and now its puppy's chewed out its stitches and you're annoyed because they're so stupid. But did, like, are you sure that you made sure that you explained why it's important for the e-collar to stay on? And you know, that's a silly example, but that's, yeah.
Yeah, they do exist. And I think that is a really powerful quote when thinking about this, because as we mentioned in the beginning, like, this client bashing, it's not just harmful to potentially to the relationships you have with your clients, but we know that negative talk, negative self-talk about yourself, negative talk about those around you actually changes the morale of the people that you work with. It changes how you think about different scenarios, how you respond to stressful stimuli. And overall, that can honestly just bring everybody down. You're going to be less productive. You're not going to be as nice to each other as a result, because you're practicing this negative talk about someone else behind their back. And sure, you may think, oh, I would never do that to one of my colleagues or one of my friends, but you're doing it to someone who can't defend themselves right then and there. So who's to say that that kind of practice won't spill out into other areas of your life? So that's at least one side of the negative impact I can see of client bashing. But tell us a little bit more about some of the other negative sides.
Yeah, I'm going to follow up on or carry on with what you're saying. And it sounds almost a bit woo-woo, but I think it affects your... No, I don't think so. It's a fact. It affects your vibe, your energy.
Yeah.
When you are in that negative mindset of... So I've just sat behind closed doors with my colleague and client bashed this person who just came in. Now I'm in that frame of mind. So that's what my thought patterns are doing. And that spills out into how I behave and how I come across. So now I go to my next client and I'm in that negative frame of mind. It's a lack of empathy. So I've chosen this non-empathetic approach to my human interactions. And I go through the door and I switch over to my friendly, happy, I'm here to serve you. In my head, I think I am. But my underlying tone is not that. And there's a lot of data, neurological data and studies that shows that we as humans are very, very, very good at picking up those vibes. So I might think that I'm being super friendly and polite and helpful in my consult, but I was just out there bitching about people. So I bring that into my next interaction with me. And that client subconsciously picks up on that. And they don't know it, but they might be like, well, what's something off about this vet? I don't particularly... And immediately you put a wall in that connection thing that is so essential for what we do. I read a study once, it's an old study as well, where they looked at human doctors who had complaints, serious complaints against them. And then they went back and looked at, first of all, what they said. So recordings of these doctors, of hundreds and hundreds of doctors. So a group that have had complaints and a group that haven't had complaints. And they looked at what they said in consults to see if there's any prediction of how what you say that will make it more likely that you get complaints again. Because the reality is that everybody makes mistakes, but whether you get complaints or not is maybe a factor. Do you say the wrong sort of things? And then they went further and took the recordings of those of client conversations of doctors and removed the words but kept the tone. So they edited the audio so that it's just tone of voice.
Ooh.
Long story short, the end of the study showed that when they play those little bits of audio of tone of voice and things to study subjects, so random members of the public, not psychologists, so students and everybody from all over life, it's something like 20 seconds or something like that. They could play little snippets of audio of those doctors, and with high predictability, people will say, yeah, he's going to get complaints against him or she's not. So that's how good people are at reading your subconscious signals, tone of voice, frame of mind. They don't even know it, but they've decided whether they like you within 20 seconds of you opening your mouth.
Yeah.
So how does it not have any relevance of what you just did the minute before you came into the 5 minutes before you came into that consult room? So what you're doing now is now you are boycotting your next client interaction. So then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy to go, I believe clients suck. So then I go into a consult room and I behave in a certain way. So then I don't have more connection with my next client. So then clients are going to be less likely to be warm and interactive and nice to me. And then I go, yeah, you see, people suck. But you've got a part in that.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And it's less about what you say. It's more about how you say it, which is, oh my goodness. The more we get into like neuropsychology on these things, the more I'm like, oh, this is so cool. But
empathy.
Oh,
it's an empathy. Yes. It's an empathy. And I won't get down to that rabbit hole. It's compassion actually more than empathy.
Yes.
But other studies that show that people recognize when you're being empathetic. They see it in your eyes, they see it in your face, they see it in your posture, and then they respond. then they open and connect and warm.
Mm-hmm.
For me, what it means practically is I have to repeatedly, every single shift, choose empathy. So I have to be aware when I'm losing it, or I'll call it compassion. But when I go halfway through my shift and I'm hungry and I'm tired and I've just had one of those other clients that we talked about that was unreasonable, so detect that there's a mood shift for me. And then I have to physically reset and go, oh, I'm in that space. Next consult, leave it behind.
It's emotional intelligence.
New client, new person. I'm going to go and I'm going to approach this with empathy.
Yeah. So like having that level of emotional intelligence to then recognize like essentially what is that energy you're giving off? Where is your headspace at so that you can take those couple seconds, which I know so many of us are like, I have no time between my consults. There's no way I could ever. But it's like, honestly, you have the time because by taking those couple seconds to really one, acknowledge where your headspace is and two, figure out a way to shift that mindset, you're going to have a more positive interaction with your next client. You're, again, probably going to have better compliance, better outcomes with them. And as a result, have a more positive outlook when you leave that next consult, which will then kind of bubble on to the so on and so forth for the rest of the day. So as you, I guess, like trying to break it down for people, because I know a lot of us are like, ah, but it's so fun to client bash a little bit, or just I just need to do it to get the anger out type of thing.
That is an important point because it sounds like what I'm saying or what we're discussing is stiff upper lip, just take it. You know, when things do go wrong, just suck it up. And I don't think that's healthy either. No. Acknowledge it for sure. So for me, when my last shift, I had a negative client interaction that didn't go well. And it upset me for sure. I was very upset. And part of that process for me was to talk about it to a colleague, but not in a bitching way. And I don't know, stupid clients, it was, I'm trying to be more vulnerable. And I said to one of the nurses, I'm really upset. This is what happened. But then I do try and keep the client perspective. I said, I get that the guy was upset. It was a euthanasia. It was an unpleasant situation. He had many reasons. You know, the path for conflict was laid out before we even started. And I maybe did some things wrong, but I unpacked it. I said, this happened. This client accused me of this and you're supposed to have, and I'm quite upset. And that helped in itself. And then I had to do it again at home. I had to talk to my wife about it and say, and I actually spoke to the practice manager, my clinical team manager, and said, this is what happened. Zero complaints. I didn't expect them, but it's talking through it, understanding. And then also trying to learn from it to go, well, I probably could have been better in that. The guy got upset, but I dropped the ball here. And that's why I get upset. So absolutely talk about it.
Yeah. And I think what's really important, what you mentioned on that second half is acknowledging what you can learn from that scenario. Like, how is it then going to influence the next time you come across it, or how, even just like the next 10 minutes. So I know sometimes you just need someone to be a sounding board and to say like, I don't need you to say anything back at me. I just need to talk at you. But sometimes it can be nice for them to, if they can respond in a way that says like their own emotional intelligence of saying, okay, I see you are angry, you are upset about the scenario, you're working through it. Like if you or I are in that position where we're listening to someone kind of just give it all over. And what is a good phrase or what is a good question to help prompt that reset in the mindset? What is something that you could ask them to encourage them to shift how they're looking at things? I don't know if I phrased that correctly.
I'll rephrase it to make sure I've got the question right. So let's say you and me are working together and you've come out of a consult, Mo, and you're upset. You know, I can see your cheeks are flushed and I can see you're in a bad mood. And I'm like, what's up? And he said, that client just absolutely reamed me for the money or something like that. So what will I say? Often, it sounds silly, but why exactly are you this upset? Because you've had this situation before. What about that situation really upset you? So try and get to where does that anger or sadness or resentment come from? And then just dig into that a little bit and talk to them about, so why when a person says that, does it make you feel that way? It sounds trite, but how does it make you feel? And be specific, not just, angry. No, are you sad actually? Are you angry? Are your feelings hurt? Do you feel like your integrity has been attacked by this client? Do you feel disappointed in yourself? Because sometimes that's it. Often I'm in situations like that, I'm actually really annoyed with myself because part of me knows that I dropped the ball. You know, maybe I didn't communicate properly or say something. So ask them, what exactly are you feeling? Why does that situation make you feel like that? And was there something? Sometimes it stings a bit, and often people don't want to hear this. So I can do it with myself, but it's hard to do it to others. But were you at fault? Was there something in that situation that triggered it, that you were partially responsible for? Take responsibility for it if you can and go, all right, well, next time. And then the flip side, if you evaluate the situation with them and they go, no, I actually didn't. The client was just unreasonable. Then you can let it go. You can go, okay, well, my integrity is intact. I didn't do anything wrong. The client has a reason. Something else is going on in their life, or they are emotionally unintelligent, or they are emotional, heightened emotion because of the situation. So I'm not speaking to a rational, reasonable person at this point. So it's not my fault. So I can let it go. I don't have to mull it over. I can move on.
I think those are so good. And one thing that I would add would be, how do you want to move forward from here?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like, do you want to?
And sometimes it is just let it go. Sometimes it is just that, to go, yeah, what just happened has nothing to do with me and everything to do with them. Don't always assume that, because sometimes we are, as I said, you played a role.
Yeah.
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 We get very defensive. Well, I'm just here trying to do my best, and you know, I have to charge for this. And yeah, but I get it. Very often I get why people get upset, our clients, because, you know, we didn't do something right, or it's just the situation. Sometimes it's out of your control. But go, yeah, what's my part in it? And if my part is zero and they are just being an a-hole, well, fine. Let them move along. And the next client is probably not going to be one.
No, I think those are all really good. And kind of looking back on our conversation so far, we've kind of lined things up of saying, looking at like, what is client bashing, and like when we see it, when we've done it ourselves. And we've moved into this idea that it's honestly not helpful to your team, to you, to the next client that you end up talking with. There definitely can be a little bit of a pressure release valve by talking to someone about it. But in those conversations, it's kind of important to have emotional intelligence yourself. And if you're the person that is the sounding board, we've covered a couple questions that you can then ask that are prompting to help the person who's decompressing to kind of work through it and move through it. But I feel like we're kind of coming up to that kind of magical end to the episode of like, how do we wrap all this up to talk about it? Because I know this isn't something that you can just fix in one day. It takes many, many days, weeks, months of practicing this shift in your mindset, and just even for yourself, but also for your team, of being able to then recognize when people are doing this and also saying, hey, you guys, like, I get that you're upset right now, but this is not the right time to do this. And so it's kind of speaking up to your team members when you see that happening, because that will be the general shift that you want to see in everybody else in that practice that will make a more positive mindset, like in years to months to come. So I wanted to mention that little bit, but I feel
quick question for you as a team leader or somebody who has that role. How do you do that without, because again, when people are in that offloading mode, it feels good and they want to do it, but you've got to put a stop to it, but without being the fan police, or without being, she's such a goody two-shoes, she's the same. How do you approach it? How do you say to somebody, hey, do you realize what you're doing, and I think we should change direction with this conversation or our thought pattern?
Oh, such a good one. And a little bit, it depends on the person that you're speaking to and where you know they're at with things. But I think in general, when you approach into a conversation, like most of the time, it's like you're sitting there typing your notes and you just happen to overhear it. And I think actually walking up to that conversation and saying, okay, in a way, kind of like validating their feelings to be like, that would be really upsetting. I get it. That hurts. But at the same time, also saying, and thankfully at my practice, we've actually had this like a big agreement amongst everybody that we're not going to do that. So we've already set the playing field, set the base for that one. So now whenever we do see something like that happening, we can say, all right, I get it. This is hard. It hurts. But the time for that is over. Like, you've said your piece at this point. We can talk about it a little bit later if you want to, if you feel like you still need to. But right here, right now, we're kind of moving out of a decompression and into just a bash. Kind of phrasing it that way, I think, would be something that I'd come across. But again, it kind of depends on the person and the actual situation.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of things would you add to that?
I think probably my main way of doing it is, as you say, acknowledging, validating that it does suck. That's one of the things that suck about the job, is what just happened to you is not good. But I try and present an empathetic or at least a client perspective. So I'll say, oh yeah, that's really terrible. I suppose they were upset because this and this and this. So I get why they felt that way, because they're probably really angry at themselves because the dog got run over in their driveway, and they're angry at themselves and now they're projecting it on you, but it sucks. I think just putting that flip into somebody's head to say, yeah, but view it from the other side. And then you might understand why they did that. And then you'll realize it wasn't you or how you put a part in that. I think that often helps, because that's what I have to do for myself. I have to, if I don't feel empathy, they talk about cognitive empathy, to go, I have to think about this and go, well, why might this person be acting that way? Oh yeah, I get it. And that de-escalates the emotion for myself immediately. So doing that for somebody helps a lot, I find.
Yeah. I find that when I do add that little bit in, because that's usually where people, they kind of know that I'm going to add that little tidbit in there to be like, oh, well, I wonder if they're experiencing blah, blah, blah. And you can just see them go grumble, 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 grumble. Like, yeah, you're right, whatever.
Absolutely.
Well, I know we've had, like, honestly, we could keep on talking about this because there are so many different levels and we've only scratched the surface. But Hugh, I know you have a really good quote from a well-known comedian for us to kind of wrap things up here. But how would you kind of take us home on this topic of client interactions?
Yeah, I think it's an overarching attitude shift, life view shift that gels nicely with that. Because again, we talk about empathy and compassion and all those things. And those are all positive emotions that all would fall under the greater banner of, I'm going to call it love because of this quote, but I'll rephrase it, heart, because people get weird when you say love. They think about romantic love or anything like that. But the first time the penny dropped for me, and there's certainly many wiser people in history going back thousands of years who've had the same message, but there's a speech by Jim Carrey, a commencement speech, that if you haven't watched it, the listeners go and find it.
It's so good.
So good. But Jim Carrey, and it's so funny that it's him because he's the most silly, out there, ridiculous actor. Like, his roles are so silly, but he's actually a really profound, really deep thinker. And he finishes his talk by saying, when you walk out of this door, you will only ever really have two choices, love or fear. Choose love and don't ever let fear turn you against your playful heart. So you only ever have two choices, love or fear. So I call it heart. For me, in veterinary practice, I call it heart versus fear. And I try to evaluate situations, conflict situations, even clinical decisions sometimes. When I'm struggling with I don't know what to recommend in this patient, because, you know, you get stuck on something. You get stuck in that thought loop. Is to ask myself, what's motivating my decision or my conflict in the situation or my inability to make a decision? Is it because I'm fearful of what can go wrong? Am I deciding this because I don't want to get in front of the vet board, or because I'm scared that the person won't like me, or pick your reason, your fearful reason? Or am I acting out of heart because I want what's best for this patient, because I, you know, all these positive things that we talk about. And usually the love, the heart part is the right decision. Even if, and it's, we can talk for ages on this because I've thought about this a lot, because there's reason to be fearful, right? Things can go wrong. You can mess up patients. You can end up in front of the vet board. All these things can happen. But I find that if you choose the heart route, those things become so much less likely, because, again, that connection, the people realize that you're doing what you're doing for the right reasons and resonate with that. So even when things do go wrong, which they will always eventually go wrong, it's much, much less likely that it will go down the wrong way, because people go, well, I'd love Dr. Mo because she cares so much. And that comes from that doing things for the heart reasons and not for the fear reasons.
That is so good. And goodness, I don't even know where to go from that. I feel like that was a perfect mic drop.
Okay, I'll drop my mic if you want.
Don't drop your mic. It's too expensive. but no, I think that honestly, it does wrap things up. It brings on to this whole thing of, like, when it comes down to it, the relationships that you have with the people around you, and whether that's the people that you work with or the clients that come to the door, like, that is what really matters. That's where the value is. And thinking, like, on a day-to-day basis, like, okay, how am I going to foster relationships? Like, how am I going to make this day better for myself and better for those that basically want to leave people better than you found them, kind of mindset. Mm-hmm. And that goes for yourself, that goes for your clients, that goes for your colleagues. Like, how are you going to start each day that you can leave them in a better headspace than where you found them? Yeah.
And I think that you're great at it. When I watch your stuff and listen to your podcasts and your social media, that is your attitude. And thank you so much for showing it to the world and the work that you're doing with it and helping others to move in the same direction.
Oh, well, thank you. I almost don't know what to do with that other than say thank you.
You can just say thank you.
Absolutely. Well, I honestly, like, I know we could keep on talking forever, but Hugh, thank you so, so much for coming on the podcast, sharing your insight from all your years of experience of being in practice, working through the podcast, working with people on this very real issue that we do have within veterinary medicine. And it's really important for new grads that they can hear the other side of the scenario, honestly, because I know it's so easy as a new grad to jump onto the blame train and just bash these clients. But I think it's really important to take a step back, really look at why that's happening and what we can do differently, which is to foster relationships. So thank you once again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, until next time, guys, we'll see ya. Bye.
So that's it for another show. Thank you so much to Dr. Mariah and her guests for today's tips. And if you're interested in learning more about what we do to support early stage vets in their careers, then check out my book, So Your Vet Now What, or Non-Clinical Skills Training Class of the same name. Until next time, take care. Are you a new or recent veterinary graduate? If so, listen up. My course, So Your Vet Now What, has been put together specifically for you. We focus on the non-clinical skills. Don't tune out. This is not as dull as it sounds, I promise you. In fact, almost every career problem that people face are due to not having well-developed non-clinical skills. The skills that I'm talking about are things like client communication, so you have great relationships with clients. Emotional intelligence, so you've got great relationships with your teammates. Effective negotiation skills, so you can get paid what you are worth. Management of imposter syndrome and how to build formidable resilience. They're not just skills, they are prerequisites vital for success in financial and emotional well-being. This course serves as an essential stepping stone to your success. So let's take the leap together. I will be your mentor as we go through 12 modules helping you transition from being a student to being a fully rounded professional. Head to www.drdavenichol.com/SYAV-class to learn more. Now back to the show.